So it's our word of the day. Now, we don't usually do this when we talk about the first three words that go with that fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, and peace. Matter of fact, if I asked you if you had love, you'd probably raise your hand. And if I asked you if you had joy, you probably would raise your hand. If I asked you if you had peace, you'd raise your hand. But when I asked you if you had patience, nobody wants to raise their hand. You ever had your patience tested? Every single minute it feels like, right? How about a morning like this? You're in a hurry and the alarm did not go off this morning. Everything you do seems to go wrong. You get dressed. As you're eating breakfast, you find that you spilled some food on your outfit. More time lost. You get in the car. It will not start. Dead battery. More time lost. You feel your blood pressure rising. Finally, you get the car started, and now it's straight to work. But you get behind somebody who is driving 45 miles per hour on the highway, and there is no room to pass them. More time lost. Next up, you hit every stoplight on the way after you get off the interstate. More time lost. And I know while all this is going on, you are the picture of composure and Christianity behind the wheel of your car. Seriously? You ever had one of those mornings when absolutely nothing seemed to go right? You had a very busy schedule. You had a plan that you needed to accomplish. And it just seemed everything went wrong and everything got tossed out the window. And you just lost it. You did. You got pushed to the limit and you lost your patience. And you know when you're driving, which is the first thing that usually goes when you're running a little bit late? You see the stoplights. You're sitting there and you're sitting there at the stoplight and you're looking at it and you swear the stoplight is going about an hour. And you're just a little bit tempted, aren't you? There's no one around. It's all clear. So you just kind of pull on through the stoplight. I'd like to share some information from you that I found from the USA Today. It's an article that they wrote on running red lights. The report says, according to the Institute for Highway Safety, found that running red lights injures 250,000 people every year and kills at least 800 people just by simply not waiting for a red light. Another article from the Institute states every year these accidents, just running the red light, rack up an estimated $7 billion in property damage, medical bills, and lost productivity just by running a simple red light. Now, I have to trust the statistics here because I want to tell you, I went out and looked on the little highway safety board, and according to them, the longest traffic light in America is in West Milford, New Jersey. You know how long it is? 5 minutes. The average traffic light, and by the way, I actually tried this week because I have a knack for hitting the stoplights. The average traffic light in America, 2 minutes. So we're a society that is obsessed with getting things in a hurry. We're a society that wants things right now. We have drive-through windows. We have microwave popcorn. We have all the things that we can get. We don't have to go to the video store to rent our movies anymore. We can get them right through our television. We are obsessed with the here and now. So much so that we put our life at risk all the time simply because we want to run a simple red light. We lack patience. What did Elmo find out the word patience means? It means the ability to wait calmly. Now, I want to tell you that's important because everybody has to wait. All right, there will be some point in your life where you will have to wait for something. I don't care whether it's a phone call from a doctor. I don't care whether it's to unwrap a package on Christmas morning. I don't care whether or not it's you're waiting on somebody to get ready so you can get where you need to be. At some point, everybody has to wait. You don't get the option. The question is how do you wait? We've been looking at the fruit of the Spirit from the point that we want to figure out how to actually make the Spirit live in our life. We've been talking this year about commitment. And we want to talk about how that commitment should look. When I see a Christian's life, what should it look like? We're not doing this so we can examine each other's life. We're doing this because we want to give a basis that we can examine our own life. Galatians 5:22 and 23, that gives us the verses that gives us the nine aspects of this one fruit. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law. And if you remember when we started this series, we decided we were going to split this into two parts. The first four aspects of the fruit are kind of the inside things. They're the things that have to work on the inside of our life that has to work through us. And then the last ones, the last five, are, well, they're more of the outside things. They're the physical representation of what's going on. And so like I said earlier, we talked about love, joy, and peace. And this morning, well, we're going to talk about patience. Do you have any? Do you have just a little bit? Do you feel like you're a patient person? You see, because patience is important because it is the linchpin aspect of this fruit. It kind of goes from the inside to the outside. It's the thing that transitions that which is happening in our inside of our life, the love, joy, and peace, into the outside where we can see the other things that goes. It's so important. I'd like to tell you, if you have a patience issue, pay real close attention, because we're going to find out today your issue isn't patience at all. If you lack patience, there is something else you're missing. But before we get to that point, we're going to talk about how to grow some patience. Now, I got to tell you, I've heard lots of people say they never pray for patience. Probably a good thing, because if you pray for patience, then God only has one way to teach you patience: make you wait until you figure it out. Just like the little Elmo trying to figure out how to wait for the basketball game. But the funny thing is, when I read that verse, those verses in Galatians, it doesn't say we don't ever pray for love, do we? We don't really pray for joy. We don't really pray for peace. We don't pray for those things because those are just the things that we expect to get out of our Christian life. And the funny thing is, patience is right there with it. Patience isn't something you're supposed to pray for. It's something that you're supposed to receive. The word that we see in the NIV is not patience, but it is forbearance, which means the quality of someone who is patient and is able to deal with a difficult person or situation without becoming angry. So the idea of patience isn't that you just deal with a difficult situation. You deal with it in such a way that you keep your composure, your blood pressure doesn't go up, you don't feel stressed. And I'm not very good at this, I'll be honest with you. I like to consider myself a patient person, but I struggle with it. So this morning, we're going to talk about how to grow some patience in our life. Not we're going to pray for it. How do we nurture patience so that we see it growing in our life? And the first place we're going to start is the seed of patience. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 29. And the one thing we're going to have to figure out is we're going to have to control our temperament. This is what Proverbs says. Whoever is patient and has great understanding, but one who is quick-tempered displays folly. Do you have a quick temper? You have an itchy trigger finger? I mean, you know from past sermons, I have confessed I've had temper issues in the past. I had really huge temper issues when I was a kid. Temper is something that kind of follows me. So I guess when you're going to preach a sermon on temper and you're going to talk about temper, I understand what it means to lose your temper. You know, there's some funny things about losing my temper. Temper is nothing more than selfish frustration. You get that? We call it something else, but really, if you lose your temper, it is nothing more than pure selfish frustration, because here is what happened. I didn't get what I wanted when I wanted it, and now I'm going to let you know what I want and when I want it, and I'm going to let you hear about it until I get what I want when I want it. That's temper. Temper is all about an inward frustration that just begins to boil inside of you, and you're trying to figure out what it is that you want, and you're trying to express it, and eventually you can't hold the cork anymore, and boop, off it comes. And that frustration begins to just pour out of you. It's detrimental to patience. Now, there are some things that I want you to remember when it comes to this temper issue. As much as we like to think a temper tantrum makes people more pliable, honestly, people do not respond well to temper. They don't respond positively to temper. You think about it. If you throw a temper tantrum, anybody here ever had a kid that threw a temper tantrum? You know, you're going through the store, and there's the candy aisle, and they want the candy, and you say, no, I'm not getting the candy. And then they do something silly like, well, I'm going to hold my breath until I get the candy. Go ahead, I'll let you pass out. Or worse yet, they decide, you know what, I know how to get my way. I'll just embarrass you, so I'm going to lay on the floor and kick and scream and throw a temper tantrum until I get what I came after. If you would just hand me the candy, then it would be over. But parents, do you ever respond positively to that? It's kind of funny. I know I tried things like this when I was a kid. It never seemed to get me the piece of candy. It really didn't. But the funny thing is I never really learned it as a kid. I decided I was going to keep trying it until it worked, just like the little bee going out the window, the bee, this time. It will eventually work for me if I just work really hard at it. But the truth is that temper never works this way. If you lose your temper, it's not going to be positive. Now, here's something else, and this is really funny because temper takes time. You see, usually when you lose your temper, it's because you're in a hurry. It's because you had some constraints on your life. Thus, think about this for a second. If you lose your temper, then you actually need more patience because accomplishing your goal is going to take longer than what it would have before. Now, that's food for thought, isn't it? So that means when I'm waiting for somebody to get ready and I have somewhere I have to be, if I can just stay calm and I can get things moving along the way and keep calm, then I'm probably going to get there a lot quicker than, you know what, if I lose it. And if I become frustrated and I become angry and I begin to let that pour out of me, then you know what's going to happen? Well, then we're going to have an argument about why you weren't getting ready on time. And then we're also going to have an argument about why I got upset. And we're going to go back and forth. The first thing you know, we spend another 20 minutes arguing about it. So we're 20 minutes later than we would have been before. See, that's the way temper works in our life. So you need to remember that if you're going to have a temper issue, well, prepare to need more patience in your life. Here's the other thing that you need to realize. Temper is addictive. Blowing off steam, it gives you a rush. And in that moment, you feel great. But honestly, what did you accomplish? If you just got angry for the sake of being angry. Now, I'm not talking about correctional anger. I'm not talking about when you're trying to do like Jesus did when he entered into the temple. I'm not talking about that. But if you just get angry for the sense of being angry, let me tell you, when you get angry, your body produces hormones within inside of it. It does. They are the same hormones that we use when we get into a troublesome situation, and we get into the point where we're either going to fight or flee is what it's called. And it's a adrenaline rush that goes through you that prepares your body to either fight or run away. Okay, we've talked about what this does to your body in previous sermons, but the idea is that when you get angry, all of those hormones go rushing through you, and those hormones are addictive. They are. So if you're going to allow yourself to become temper controlled, then you realize you're just heading yourself down a path that's going to blow up on patience. You see, unless you can learn some control for your temperament, then patience is always going to be just out of your grasp. Because let me tell you what Satan's going to do. He's going to put that little thing in front of you that's going to frustrate you. He's going to put that stick in your cage, and he's going to keep poking. He's going to keep poking. Because eventually he knows. He's going to find the trigger that's going to send you down this path. So if you're going to have some patience in your life, the first thing you're going to have to deal with is your temperament. You're going to have to learn to approach difficult situations in more of a calming aspect. It means that maybe in a difficult situation, you're going to have to start out on your knees instead of with your mouth. You're going to have to give it to God before you try to control it yourself. How many times has your temper let things get out of hand? It happens all the time. But once we learn to control our temper, there's something else that we need if we're going to continue to let our patience grow. Hebrews chapter 6, verses 11 through 12 says, "We want each of you to show the same diligence to the very end, so that what you hope for may be fully realized. We do not want you to become lazy, but to imitate those who through faith and patience inherit what has been promised." The word is diligence. Now, we'll talk about what the word actually means in a few moments, but I'd like to ask you some questions as I prepare you to get ready to understand diligence. Here's a question. How many times have you been in a hurry due to poor planning? Think about your life. How many times are you in a hurry just because you didn't plan well? You didn't think about you just thought from the A to Z, and you didn't worry about the A, B, C, D, all the things that go in the middle. You didn't worry about the inside. You just worried about, how do I get there? How many times have you been in a hurry just because of poor planning? How many times have you been in a hurry in the morning simply because you decided to hit the snooze button on the alarm clock? Maybe that's a better way to look at it. Yeah, that alarm clock gets you every single time, doesn't it? How many times has your lack of motivation, the word lazy, sent you rushing out the door in a frantic pace to complete a task? How many times have you just sat there unable to get yourself motivated to do something? How many times have you ever sat there and you know what, it'll just take care of itself? How many times have you ever been there and all of a sudden you realize the paper's due tomorrow? The job that I had to turn in, that's due tomorrow. You know what? My parents are coming tomorrow and the house is a mess. And so now all of a sudden you're in a frantic pace to get it all done. And it impacts our patience. Is procrastination an issue for you? Are you busy putting off the things that you should be doing today? You put them off tomorrow? It's funny, King Solomon tells us there's a time and a season for everything. There's a point behind what we're doing. You see, diligence, it's about using time wisely. It's about doing the task at hand. See, God gives each and every one of us a certain number of hours during the day. It's 24. Okay, I'm sorry, just because we didn't plan well doesn't mean you get an extra hour in your day. But because sometimes we are not diligent, we do not take the time that we've got in hand, well, what we end up with, well, many times, we lose our patience because we have too much to do, because we are doing today what we put off doing yesterday. The Bible says that we're supposed to redeem the time. Time is supposed to be important. It's not something that's supposed to be wasted. So we need to understand, if we're going to be patient, then we're going to have to start making a plan for our life. Now, this doesn't mean that you got to sit out and plan every single second of every single day of your life. It doesn't mean you have to throw spontaneity out the door. But what it does mean is that you need to look at the things that are valuable in your life, and those are the things you need to do. I had this illustration, and I started to bring it, but I decided we had enough illustrations going on with the Elmo and the red light. I didn't need another physical one, but I wanted to explain to you. I had this professor one time, and I know he stole it off of somewhere else, that brought this big jar, one of those great big dill pickle jars, you know, the jars I'm talking about, and he brought it into the classroom, and on the table beside him, he had these great big rocks. He had this bucket of little rocks, and then he had this bottle of water. And the idea was, could he fit every single one of those things into that jar? And the funny thing is, he started picking up those big rocks, and he started putting them down into the jar. And first thing you know, the jar looked kind of full. I mean, it had all these big rocks in it, and the jar looked full, and you really could not have put another big rock in, but then you know what he did? He took the bucket of pebbles, and he began to pour the pebbles in, and the pebbles bounced down the rocks, and they began to fill it, and they began to go between all the big rocks. And surprise, surprise, all of the little rocks fit in between the big rocks. He said, and you know what? The jar looks full. But then he took the water and he began to pour the water into the jug. And then the water began to filter itself between all the little rocks. And the first thing you know, he did it. He had all the big rocks, all the little rocks, and all of the water in the same jar. But the trick was, is he had to prioritize. He had to make a plan. He had to be diligent. The big rocks have to go first. The important things that need to be done have to go first. And then if there's space left over, you put the little rocks in between, and then you put the water. That is the idea of diligence. Take care of the big things first. There's another part of patience that's important. It's a word we don't like. The word is humble. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 1 and 2 says, "As a prisoner for the Lord, then I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Become completely humble and gentle." Then notice what it says. "Be patient, bearing with one another in love." And as I read that, I know what the word humble is, but I also understand that, well, humble people, they're usually patient people. See, I remember I told you that the idea of temper is unselfish frustration. Well, humble people, they understand this idea, and they don't focus much on their own issues here. Humble people, they're usually pretty patient people. You know what else I find the flip side of that coin is? Arrogant people, they're not. People that are focused on themselves are not very patient people. You see, if you lack patience, you don't lack patience. Here's what you do. If you lack patience, then your problem is the way that you perceive yourself. I don't know that I like that. I don't know that I'm real comfortable with it. See, if I lack patience, it isn't the fact that I'm not a patient person. The fact is that I have perceived myself more important. It's funny, babies are highly impatient. They want what they want, and they want it now. But that's okay for babies, because that's a survival mechanism for babies. Babies have to cry when they don't get what they want. Babies have to let you know because they have no ability to feed themselves. They have no ability to change their own diapers. They lack that, and so they also lack patience. But the problem is as I grow, I should be moving away from the give-it-to-me-now mentality. I should be able to start doing some things for myself. Impatience is nothing more than the value of our needs above the needs of somebody else. Make sure I say that again just so you get it. Impatience is the valuing of our needs above the needs of somebody else. That's what impatience is. That means when you look at somebody and you become impatient with them, then what you've really done is you said, you know what, whatever you need at this point is not as important as what I need at this point. And then it kind of goes, doesn't it? Because you value your needs so highly, you become frustrated because your needs don't get met. So then the temper kicks in. And then because you're all consumed with yourself and you're trying to figure out how to make your stuff work, then you know what happens? Well, you don't become very diligent. You throw the plan out the window because you're focusing on yourself, and the diligence goes out the window. And then all of a sudden, what really happens is because you're now so consumed with yourself, you become very arrogant and you're expressing your needs right out there in front of everybody. And you know what happens? Well, the humility goes out the window. And guess what goes with those three things? Patience. See, that's the way it works. So I guess if we're going to become patient, we're going to have to understand how to grow some branches. And the branches are all about understanding the purpose of time. It's probably one of the most valuable lessons I ever learned when I was a kid. How to value time. Now, people taught me how to value time. Trust me, my mom was a schedule fanatic, and she honestly, if you were ready to go when she's ready to go, she might actually just leave you laying there. I'm not kidding. You might have been walking to where you had to be because she had a schedule and she kept the schedule. And I think that taught me a little bit about the word time. But that's not the value of time I'm talking about, you see, because God has a value for time. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 9 says, "The Lord is not slow in keeping his promise, as some understand. Instead, he is patient with you, not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance." See, God views time much differently than we do. We view time as days, the hours, the minutes, and the seconds that we have to accomplish things for our life. God views time while God is gently holding the sands of time in hopes that more will come with him. And you realize, when I call it the sands of time, if you put sand in your hand and you squeeze it too tight, what happens to the sand? You lose it. If you put sand in your hand and you hold your hand open, what happens to the sand? You lose it. Either way you go, if you squeeze it or you let it go, you're going to lose the sand. The trick is to learn how to grasp the sand in such a way you're not squeezing too tight, you're using time wisely, but at the same time, you're not just letting it fritter away. And God says you do this by you focus on how I focus on time. Time is simply that means by which God is holding back his judgment so that others can come and find him. That's the only purpose for time. You know what else you find out is, well, God sees time as an open invitation to live in him. God leaves us on this earth for a certain number of years, for a certain amount of time, also that we can learn how to live in relationship with him. You realize that this life here on earth is nothing more than a dress rehearsal for eternity. We're not supposed to live one way here and then another way. See these red lights? Maybe God is putting them up there because he's trying to tell us, stop and look around you. Maybe there's somebody in need. Maybe what you have going on in your life isn't the most important thing for that day. Maybe what you have going on in your life isn't the most important thing for that moment. Maybe the person on the side of the road that has a flat tire is not just in need of having the tire changed. Maybe they're in need of having a life changed. And your simple stopping, well, it'll give them a chance. Maybe that person in front of you that cut you off in traffic and made you a little bit later than you wanted to be, you don't know what's going on in their life. Maybe they also have some things going on. Maybe they're in a hurry because, who knows, maybe they're on the way to the hospital. Maybe they've got a kid in the back seat that's wailing and screaming because they need to have a bottle and they didn't realize what was going on. And so now they're in, you don't know what people's lives are going about. But patience is the key to it all. See, we have to learn to live life in the shade of patience. It's the only way this fruit is going to work. I can preach about all the love and all the joy and all the peace, and we're going to talk about all the things that come on the outside, but if we don't figure out how to be patient, how to wait on God to do the things that he wants to do in our life and do so in a calm manner, then our love, joy, and peace are never going to be able to take root, and the world is never going to be able to see the outside peace. So the next time somebody asks you if you have patience and you say no, just remember what you're really saying. You're taking out this middle part of the fruit and you're setting it aside saying, you know what, I want the love, joy, and peace, and I want the gentleness, kindness, goodness, and self-control, but I don't want this peace. And it doesn't work that way. This isn't an a la carte fruit where you can just take part of it. You're going to get it all or you end up with none of it. Patience. This morning we're going to do a time of decision, and I want you to ponder, how are you using the time in your life? Are you just running from thing to thing trying to fulfill your life? That's going to make you very impatient. Maybe you're here and you know what? You never thought about this idea of patience in your life, and you don't really know how to get it. Well, let me tell you, the first step that you need to do is to give your life to Christ. If you've never done that, this time of decision is for you to come forward and take that step. If you've done that, then it's time for you to start pondering how to get patience to grow in your life. Maybe it means you just learn to wait on the red light. Let me give you something that you can try this week. Next time you're out and you get stuck at one of them red lights, look at the people in the cars around you, and instead of trying to figure out how long before the red light changes, try to pray for them. Just try to pray for whatever is going on in their life. It might change your perspective greatly of a red light. You might go looking for red lights at that point. I don't know. But this time of decision is for you to decide what it is you want to do in your life. Do you want to be patient? Do you want to wait on God? Or do you want to rush ahead of God and find yourself with impatience?